you have reached, 1, has been changed. The new number is 2. Please make a note of it.
Please repeat.
The number you have reached has been changed. The new number has been disconnected.
Ring damage.
Möchten Sie etwas zu trinken haben?
Good evening, Vice President Nixon.
Good evening, Mr. Howe.
Welches sind die Regenbogenfarben?
Do not push a key in 3 seconds. You will be disconnected.
Mein Bruder ist jünger als ich.
program. Participation of high school students and schoolmasters of Moscow, Georgia, and Connecticut.
Good morning, everyone in the U.S., and good evening, everyone in the USSR in Moscow.
And the conversation began with the safest of subjects.
Hi, my name is Greg. It's beautiful out. It's not as good as it was yesterday. It's kind of cloudy.
Hi.
Okay, let's go to Atlanta.
Yes, my name is Trip Walls, and here in Atlanta today, it's about 78 degrees Fahrenheit. That's 21 degrees Celsius. It's beautiful outside, and clouds in the sky, and everything's fine.
Okay, now let's hear from Moscow.
So the weather in Moscow is fine. It was sunny in the morning, but now it's some kind of a little rain.
Well, now that we know the weather in both hemispheres, let's go on to other questions.
I want to ask what the main reasons of your quarrels with your parents, and if you have them, how do you solve the problems with your parents?
Okay, I think one of the problems that we have with our parents is wanting to do what we want and breaking away from them before we leave for school next year, such with curfews, who we want to go out with.
Is my boyfriend, Jen,
says? The way we solve our problems with our parents, at least I think so, is that we talk about it and try to solve them just by simply discussing our problems and seeing what's wrong with them.
Is there much pressure on young people not to be involved in religious practice?
As to me, I have no friends who trust in God. Most of the people who trust in God are old now, and I think that they have no troubles. And now we are going to celebrate the introduction of Christianity in Russia. In Russia, it's going now to be a great holiday.
Atlanta, now it's your turn to ask a question of Moscow. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Dan Morlan, and I was just wondering if you can travel anywhere inside the USSR or outside.
So we like to travel. We travel very much, and in our country and in the other countries. Some our boys and girls went to the socialist countries.
Well, this is Irene. I just want to add, I think it's not so very easy to travel, and actually it is not so. No, but as for me, I've been to the United States of America last summer. I've been to California with a Soviet American peace shelter, maybe you've heard of it. And it was a rare course in our school. And it's not so very easy to go to the capitalist country, I mean, to the United States or any other one.
Now it's your turn again in Moscow to ask a question to the students in Rockville. Go ahead, Moscow.
My name is Alexander, and I want you to tell me about other entertainments besides sport. What do you prefer, movies, TV, reading, or something else?
Is it clear?
Yes, this is Roxo. It is clear. For entertainment here, we do enjoy going to the movies. Also, concerts are a very big thing. We recognize in your letters that we all like the same music groups, and they frequently tour. And we really enjoy attending concerts at the Civic Center, which is a big auditorium. And also for entertainment, we do enjoy reading for relaxing time.
Yes, Beth, this is Carrie. I think reading is a lot more popular in the Soviet Union from your comment. When we were younger, reading was really stressed, but as we've gotten older into the older grades, high school, reading is not as popular as it used to be, and I think music, movies, television are much more popular.
Okay, now, Roxel, it's your turn to ask Moscow a question. So go ahead, Roxel.
My name is Amy Rana, and I was wondering, your
size is much smaller than ours. And I was wondering, how in line were you chosen to be in the special school that you were in?
I'd like to explain that the Soviet teenagers that are taking part in this bridge study at a specialized English language school where their class is split into three small groups to make teaching more effective.
It was 9 years ago, and it was my parents' duty to send me to this school, and I think it's not very difficult in this country to go to such schools if you are interested in different languages and stuff like that.
Very good. Any other comments there in Moscow?
My name is Marina, and I'm the teacher of the students you're talking to. Unfortunately, we don't have a chance to choose the students to our school, and we just take everyone who, I mean, it's the parents' choice. If they want to send their children to our school, there is no choice for us. We just accept them. Sometimes they're not very capable, and in this case, we have problems because not everyone, as you know, is capable in the sphere of foreign languages.
Thank you very much. Now, Moscow, it's your turn to ask a question to the students in Atlanta. Go ahead, Moscow.
My name is Alex, and I'm especially interested in electronic and in computers, and I want to ask you a question. What role do the computers play in your life?
I'm Claire Butter, and computers play a big role in our lives. I mean, we use them a lot of times in businesses, and we use them at home for playing games. A lot of younger kids use them doing their homework on them. And we have printers, and we also write papers on them, and you can save the papers. And we have classes at school that teach computers. So computers pretty much play a basic role in our lives.
My name is Christina Bailey, and I'd just like to say we have a fear of nuclear power, and since the Chernobyl accident, we would like to know how you feel about nuclear power stations.
Okay, Alexander. I think that the nuclear power stations are the most profitable stations, but there are some obstacles to build such stations. But I think that the nuclear power stations is our future stations. And I want to say that every station has biological defense. And that is why it's not very dangerous for people to work at these stations and for people to live around such stations.
Well, this is Irene. I want to add that I think these stations of nuclear power are not the stations of our future. I think our future will use the energy of sun, of the wind. I think it would be better to use this energy.
I would like to add to what the students said about nuclear power stations. Recently, there were several problems connected in the Soviet Union connected with the construction of nuclear power stations, and in several regions of the Soviet Union, one of them is in Krasnodar, it's in the south of the Soviet Union near the Black Sea shore. The public opinion was very much against building a nuclear power station, and so the people won, and the nuclear power station won't be built there.
But let me just answer one other thing, too, about this nuclear power thing. In America, we have, I guess what I would classify as mixed opinions. There has been a nuclear plant closed down in one of our states in New Hampshire, and that was due to public opinion as well. And, of course, we've had problems here with Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania. And it is a concern of our students, as I'm sure it is, worldwide. Thank you very much. We have teachers in each location. I'd like to, a couple of things, let each teacher ask, or either to ask a question or make a comment to the to Marina. Marina, you can ask a question. The question I would have is
how does one become an educator in the Soviet Union? What processes do you have to go through, and perhaps what kind of background, educational background, do you need to teach in the Soviet Union?
Well, you just get the usual kind of secondary education, and if you choose the path of an educator, you are to enter a teacher's training college where you spend about 5 years getting special education, well, methods and pedagogy and things connected with teaching. And besides, you are spending a lot of time majoring in the subject that you are going to teach. As soon as you get the diploma, you are offered a job at a school, and for about 2 years you're under close attention of the teaching staff of the faculty. They are trying to help you in all ways possible and give you an opportunity to like the profession of a teacher, which is not easy. You may agree with me.
I would really like to know. I am a geographer, and my question is, how much geography do the teachers of Russia teach to students? We seem to have a problem with that, and we would like to hear how much they teach.
In fact, we start geography as early as in the first grade. It's included into nature study, and it goes on for 3 years. Just getting wider and wider, and it's about the world in general. In the fourth grade, when they're about 10 or 11, they start the world geography in series, if I may say so, starting all the seas and oceans and straits and bays and whatnot. Later on, the next year, and it's not optional, it's obligatory for all the students. They start the geography of the Soviet Union, and they study the physical geography and socio-economic geography of the world. And it's only in the ninth grade, when they are about 15, about like the students who are sitting here in this room, that they stop learning geography and have an exam.
Thank you very much. That is certainly the question I had.
Okay, and Marina, do you have a question for Beth Edmund?
What's that you appreciate in your students most?
I think the quality that I appreciate most in students actually is friendliness. And, of course, the desire to learn. Those who seem to be really interested in a class, this makes the class interesting, and certainly it makes the teacher enjoy teaching the students more.
My interest is hearing what students are watching on TV, what movies they like, what kind of music's going on. Do they have dancing and stuff like that? I'd like to take advantage of the few minutes we have left for that.
Moscow, go ahead.
Well, my name is Kint. Hi again, and I'm going to say some words about my leisure time. So, the major part of it I spend with my friends and also with my parents. I love movies, I love music very much. I have no leisure time at all. It's a great problem for me and for most of my friends, because, of course, studying takes a lot of time.
Mrs. Irene, I spend my leisure time as the others do. I like sports and fun of movies, rock music. I take part in a school drama club and stuff.
Well, it seems that many of the school children in the Soviet Union and those taking part in this discussion are well acquainted with American art.
My favorite one is, speaking about movies, it is The Goonies and Police Academy. I like them very much, and of course a lot of another movies. And speaking about books, I like Gone with the Wind by Margaret Mitchell. Speaking about music, I love Bruce Springsteen and U2.
We've got a question. So we told you about American movies you see and American music we listen to, and what can you tell us about Russian movies?
Basically nothing. It's not that we don't want to. There basically is no Russian movies. we like hockey. Soviet hockey players. Sports, I think, would be the main thing. They're really, we have no exposure to any type of Russian music, movies, even books.
We do quite often get a visit from your Russian ballet or from a Russian circus or a Russian theater, but that basically sums it up. We really don't have any exposure to any sort of culture you may have, especially your music.
I think the main reason for that is you were taught English since a young age, and English is more widely known there than Russian is known here.
Okay. Thank you very much, Atlanta and Rockville and Moscow.
And that was an abridged version of a telephone conference with the participation of high school students and teachers from Moscow, Georgia, and Connecticut, broadcast by Radio Moscow in its Radio Bridge series.
And that radio program came to you here on WUSB in Stony Brook almost at the very moment that it was transmitted. About an hour ago we received that. And for those of you that don't know, Radio Moscow is broadcasting a good part of the day and night with English language programming for this country, as do many countries. Republic of China, West Germany, England, they all broadcast on the shortwave band. It's kind of surprising because a lot of Americans don't know that. A lot of Americans really don't know much about what's going on in other parts of the world. You'll notice the curiosity on both ends of the telephone line there, which is something that has been pretty much characterized over the last week, over the last several weeks, with summits and exchange programs of various sorts. And what we're doing here tonight on Brain Damage is focusing on the summit on the Soviet Union and the United States, and how the future will be different from the way the past has been, from the way the past that we've always known of hostility and suspicion. For the first time ever, it appears that we might be able to make a little bit of progress. I'd like to hear your opinions on what's going on and what you've just heard. Give us a call at 632-6901. We do have some more of the programs from Radio Moscow we'll be going back to in a little while, but before we do, it'd be nice to hear what Long Islanders say about all this, because it's important, and we may very well have a chance to participate in something like you just heard. So give us a call at 632-6901, area code 516. The program is Brain Damage. I'm Eric Corley, and I'll be with you until midnight. That number, once again, 632-690.1. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi. I don't know. I think the summit's a good thing, but I'm kind of worried on a few points. Let's see. First of all, if you look back at Soviet history, you've had a lot of reform and stuff like that followed by totalitarianism in even greater quantity. And it seems to go back and forth.
Uh-huh.
You understand? And if you have such great reform now, what's going to happen when Gorbachev gets out of office? Are you going to have a backlash and have some great dictator trying to bring back the old communist?
Well, I think the answer to that question is pretty much how much does Gorbachev represent the rest of his government, and how much does he represent his people? Do you think it's the cry of one person, or do you think it represents something a lot bigger than that?
Well, the Russian government is notorious for not representing the wishes of its people.
Uh-huh. But it's never really given them the taste of all this freedom that suddenly is... I mean, Andrei Sakharov gave a press conference using government microphones the other day. That was unheard of. They're being exposed to Western culture. They're getting CDs and the latest Paul McCartney album. You can't just expose people to that and then take it away from them.
Well, that's something else that they'll have to deal with. If the next prime minister does want to take it away, he's going to get a big fight.
Uh-huh.
Also, I'm really worried at the vast amount of apathy that I see. When that person asked about nuclear power, it's hard for me to believe that she actually asked it and it wasn't written down for her, because I go into school and I see these kids have been so hyped up on Rambo and all this stuff that there's that communism is evil to them. It's synonymous, and people accuse me of being paranoid of nuclear war, which is exactly correct. I mean, how can you not be paranoid of nuclear war?
The only way you cannot be paranoid of nuclear war is if you're ignorant as to what nuclear war is.
And
I think what the Soviets have is more of a first-hand knowledge of just what war is and what total destruction is.
Yeah.
It seems like they're making all kinds of concessions, that they're being very humble all of a sudden, and the temptation is to ask, well, what are they up to? But they might have a firmer grasp on the reality of the situation than we do. So it may be a case where they feel it's okay to swallow your pride a little bit and make some concessions if it means lasting peace.
I know, but, I mean, just looking back, it seems that, I mean, the hippie movement tried to do stuff, but now they're yuppies. And with my generation, the kids that I see in school, they don't seem to care about anything.
Uh-huh.
Well,
you see, the thing is, the hippie movement back in the 60s, they could focus on something. There was a war going on, there was racism, and there still is racism, of course, but it's not quite as overt. Today, things seem pretty comfortable for the middle class, as far as growing up middle class. You have color TV and stereo and CD players and cable TV and all that kind of thing. So there's nothing to really revolt against. And if there's anything to revolt against, it's liberal parents. That's why you're seeing a lot of conservative kids.
Well, if there's something to revolt against, I think it's ignorance.
Uh-huh.
But they've brought up these kids in my school with this, they've told them time and time again, communism is bad, communism is against capitalism, communism is trying to take over the world. And when you bring up kids like that, how do you just say, well, no, we just lied for the past 10 years. They're actually good people. They're just like you and me.
Uh-huh. I don't know. Reagan is saying now that Gorbachev is his friend and that we can work together. What does it mean? What does the evil empire mean? What does bombing Russia in 5 minutes mean? Was that all a lie? I don't know. I don't know how he's going to back out of that. He hasn't tried yet.
I just can't understand Reagan. The way he acts, he's going to die in a few years. He's at the end of his rope. The most he has to look forward to is maybe to live to 100 or so. I've got my entire life ahead of me, and why is a man like that, a man who's old enough to be my great-grandfather, making my decisions that's going to affect my life? I mean, if a bomb drops, that's my life gone.
Uh-huh.
And just for him to toy around with the whole thing, you know, the Soviets are good, the Soviets are bad.
Uh-huh.
It just seems so unfair.
It's a decision that all of us reach. Are the Soviets good? Are the Soviets bad?
I think the vast amount of people, especially my age, just don't care.
Yeah, well, what I'm trying to do here is just get a little bit of interest stirred up by playing Radio Moscow, by showing people there is another world. Listen to it and make your own decisions. Don't just listen to what's being said on the radio, you know, other radio commercial stations, on the newspapers. Listen firsthand to the sources. And a lot of people here don't do that. They don't even know it's available. People think Radio Moscow only speaks in Russian. You know, it's not true.
It seems that that the Soviet kids seem to be a lot more sincere. I mean,
well, they're educated much better. They know world history. They know geography. You can probably learn more about American history by talking to someone who's Soviet than someone who's American, who's brought up in the American educational system. There just isn't that much emphasis on it.
It just, I don't know. How do you fight that ignorance? The kids I see in school, I would much rather watch a Rambo flick.
Yeah.
Than something that maybe shows peace between America and Russia. When it does show peace between America and Russia, it's exploitive.
Uh-huh. That's true. How do we fight that? That's a good question. I'd like to see if you have any answers. Thanks very much for calling. What town are you calling from?
What town am I calling from? Mount Sinai.
Mount Sinai. Okay, thanks very much.
Sure.
Bye-bye. 632-6901 is our telephone number. We're talking about Soviets and summits and how we can make things a little bit better. Our number is 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Well, this is Andrew Goldberger.
Hi, Andrew. Came in number two tonight.
Yeah, I can't believe that my record is broken.
Well, the record's over. So what's your feelings on all this? Do you have any feelings, you being a kid?
First of all, I want to say happy birthday to Bobby Moriarty for the third time.
Wait a minute. It was his birthday last time you called. How can you say it twice?
Because he was
born on a... Is the kid some kind of freak or something?
No, he was born on a Saturday.
And then born again the next Saturday?
I don't know.
Boy, he's a religious revivalist kid. Well, now, what's your opinions on... What do they teach you in school? That's what we're trying to figure out here.
All right. Bobby will be calling in, too, so he'll tell you his opinion.
Okay.
Let's see. They teach us about Russia a little bit, but, they teach us that it's, like, bad and everything, and about communist governments, and we have democratic and... You know, we're learning about Russia now, but we don't learn like what's happening, like current events. We just learn, like the history and stuff. Uh-huh. I'd like to know about the current events, you know.
Uh huh. What grade are you in?
Sixth
grade. Now, how much time do they focus on the Soviet Union, or do they call it Russia, which is not correct if you're talking about present day Soviets?
Well, in social studies, our chapter is now on the Soviet Union, and around the seventh of the book is on the Soviet Union. I call it USSR, Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, Russia.
Uh-huh.
You know, we learn all the names for it.
Uh-huh.
But...
Do they teach you how many republics are in the Soviet Union?
No.
Uh-huh. That's, I'm not certain myself. I think it's something like 15.
11?
Maybe 11.
Maybe you said it was 11. He learned it.
Uh-huh. But I don't think anyone around here can name all of them. I mean, it's, that's what I was saying before. The Soviets have a much better idea of our history. They could probably name all 50 states. They could probably point to them on a map. I mean, I'm not certain about
this. I can, too.
Yeah? Well, that's good. Believe me, you're ahead of a lot of college students if you can do that. A lot of college students. College students can't even find Florida on the map, let alone on the road.
This student wants to talk to you. He's a real Dexter. He's very smart.
Who's this?
My babysitter.
Andrew,
John.
How is it you always have a babysitter? Don't you have parents?
Because my mother goes out on Saturdays.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, let the babysitter talk then. And let me give out the phone number, 632-6901, if you have an opinion on this or question or comment.
Okay, Mr. Radio, call in. See you.
Yeah.
All right.
Hi.
I've been just listening to, like, what the other guy called in and said about, you know, the kids and whatever they learn in Russia.
Uh-huh.
And that the kids in Russia are less, you know, that they learn a lot less than we are. The publicity and everything about American things and, you know, Soviet politics are less, a lot more sheltered from their kids than we learn about, you know.
Uh-huh.
But our kids, it's true, education-wise, their kids seem to be a lot... smarter. They don't have as much to worry about, actually, as we do, you know, in our society that we're growing up with.
Okay, what do you mean they don't have as much to worry about?
Well, that since everything is more publicized and everything like that, you know, all the new problems that are coming up lately, you know, everybody's minds are on something different, it seems, than just education and stuff. Everyone, I don't know, the kids aren't as smart now as they are in Russia, actually, or like places, China or something like that, Japan.
Uh-huh. Well, do you think that's because there's something wrong with them or because they're just not being taught properly?
No, it's just that a lot of the kids in America are just like more, I don't know, they play around a lot more or whatever, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
They're just not as serious as the Soviet kids because there's a lot more on the line for the Soviet kids, you know?
Yeah.
As kids in like China or something like that.
Now, do you think that's got something to do with the basic way that the two societies are? One society is just naturally more serious than the other. We tend to goof off more here.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I don't think things are taken as seriously as they should be over here in regards to education, and they should be taken a lot more seriously. Because,
uh-huh.
You know, the kids are going to grow up and they're going to be in charge of the country someday.
That's a scary thought. Yes, it certainly is true. Those kids you're riding home on the train, that all drunk and rowdy, they could very well be your next cabinet, you know?
They really could be, and that's the future of the country and the way it looks right now.
Let me ask you, are you still in school?
Yeah, I'm in ninth grade.
Ninth grade. Have they taught you much about the Soviet Union in your school?
Well, this year in social studies we didn't do Soviet Union, really. We did other countries, but my parents had been to the Soviet Union. They traveled there last year, and I watch a lot of movies on it and everything like that. So I know a lot about their education and their like scientists and everything like that and what they learn.
Have you ever listened to Radio Moscow?
No, I watched a broadcast of radio of the Moscow news on TV one time. I never listened to the broadcast on radio though.
Yeah, did you know they were there?
No, not really.
That's the thing I keep saying over and over again, is that people just don't seem to know that there's a whole other way of listening to radio. There's a kind of radio you listen to with the music box and the same old things over and over again. Then there's this whole other world out there where you can pick up things from everywhere, 24 hours a day, and it's really, you know, it's not that expensive, maybe $100 for a decent set. And an antenna, and you can listen to everything and get your news straight from whatever country it's coming from.
And that's a lot more important than the music that's on the other station.
I mean, it's nice to have music, too. Plus, you get a lot of music. There's a station in Africa. It's either Ghana or Gabon. I'm not sure which one, but they play a lot of reggae music, and it's really fun to listen to.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, thanks very much for calling.
All right, thanks a lot.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Wait,
yes, Andrew.
Are you still on?
I'm still okay. Here, but we're going to go to some other calls if we get.
All right. Them. Okay, can I... I just want to say something.
Yeah.
I did my country report this year on Morocco, and...
I'm sorry, I didn't understand what you just said.
I did my country report.
Oh, your country report. Okay.
On Morocco, and we just got it back.
Uh-huh. And how did you do?
Pretty good.
That's good. Why Morocco?
Because my father was born there. And believe me, a lot of you think it's a primitive country. It's the exact same thing, almost, as the United States. They have like dirt bikes like we have. They have everything.
Uh-huh. Well, I think you'll find that people are pretty much the same no matter where you go. The same thing makes them laugh. Same thing makes them cry. They feel pain. You know, it's crazy when we get into this this whole us and them thing. I mean, I've seen the same thing among people that I know who live within a 3-mile radius of each other. You don't talk to people, and everyone just talks behind everyone's back, and pretty soon no one understands what's going on. Same thing with other countries.
I know, but this kid in school, he goes up to me, and he says, Morocco, is that where they have those Zambouli tribes and headhunters?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It's, no one under really understands all...
Yeah, well, it's all a part of the educational system. I think the burden is on the schools, on the teachers to, and not just the teachers, of course, the people who make the policy, to make sure that we come out of school knowing something about the world and not just viewing it as our adversary.
Mm.
You see?
A lot of people think it's like us.
Oh, we had a change of people here. I didn't. Go ahead.
Like the Rambo movies, you know, everything. It's inducing like us versus them and the Rocky movies and everything, you know.
Uh-huh.
Like the big fight between us versus them. And, I mean, everything's politics, but really when you get down to it, the people over there are good and the people over here are good and they're just human beings, you know.
Uh-huh.
Trying to make a living. It's not like all politics or all of, you know.
That's true. Okay, well, thanks very much for calling.
All right,
thanks,
both of you. All right, bye.
Bye. Oh, Andrew and his babysitter. How about that? That's the first time I've ever actually had that kind of a conversation. Sixth grade and ninth grade. Now, anyone else out there? 632-6901, area code 516. What are your thoughts? What are your opinions? Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi, Eric.
Yes.
Dave.
This is Dave. Dave, well, you're one of Andrew's friends, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. What grade are you in?
I'm in seventh.
Seventh grade. Okay. We're getting kind of in the middle here.
Yeah.
Do you have opinions on this?
One thing is, I can, well, it's nice to know that, like, they, like, listen to you two and all those things, that they're not, like, primitive in other, like, you just sit there and listen to, classical music. At least
well, no, there's something about Western music that and rock and roll and everything that's universal. It speaks to every young person. You'll see it in Asia and Africa and Europe. They all are fascinated. They want to know more. And the same thing in the Soviet Union. If you go over there now, people will be asking you, well, what's the new Pink Floyd album like, you know, and then they'll just be really into it. So it's the same, yes. People are into this kind of thing. They're curious about McDonald's. Now, I'm not saying that's the best thing in the world to be curious about, but it gives you a kind of common denominator so that you have something to talk about and something to identify with.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see more from them rather than just from us, rather than us just giving them our Pizza Huts and McDonald's and old Beatle records. Let's get some Russian culture. Let's get some Chinese culture. Let's get some culture from all over the world, because
usually us giving them something like rock and roll and all this stuff with commercials and stuff. Now they're getting it, but we're not really getting anything back.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah, and I want to clear up someone, Andrew. It's not Bobby's birthday. Bobby's birthday is July 16th.
Oh great! So we're gonna get another call in July. Fantastic. Thanks for clearing that up.
All right.
632-6901, area code 516. We're going to be going back to Radio Moscow in a little while, listening to the news, listening to another call-in, and things like that. Give us a call now, though. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Hi, this is Tina from Master Beach. I was just calling in reference when Andy and his babysitter called. They were talking about how movies, how they had, like, a lot of, you know, like, competition.
Uh-huh.
Countries. I think wherever you go, you're going to find the competition, even in a 3-mile radius.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I think competition starts at home, and then it starts outside the country.
Yeah, but where does communication stop? That's what we're saying, pretty much, that you have to keep communicating. You have to talk to people that you believe are your adversaries, and that way it keeps the situation from getting out of control. That's what happens so often. The situation just gets completely out of control when people don't talk to each other and when countries don't talk to each other.
I think that you find that happens anywhere, even in your own home.
But when you're dealing with superpowers, that's an almost suicidal tendency there.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
think of how we viewed the Russians only 2 or 3 years ago.
Right.
We were almost convinced that a war was inevitable. A nuclear war with the Russians was inevitable. There were films.
2 or 3 years ago, that started way back with the Cold War with...
Oh, yeah, well, it's always been there, but I think it more or less came to a head with the nuclear race to destroy ourselves. And people didn't become aware of nuclear arms as much until the 1980s. So it's been here since the end of the war, yes.
There was also a president who once said that, who threatened to expand a war with nuclear powers. I remember, I just learned that in social studies.
Uh-huh.
But I forget which, I'm going to agree on test, but I forget which president was.
Well, there was talk of dropping a nuclear bomb on Korea to speed things up there. I know that in the 1950s.
Right around that time with that.
And I'm sure there were people that would have liked to have done it to Vietnam, too. I'm sure there are people today that would like to do it to Iran and maybe other parts of the world, too. So sometimes things don't change. But I think reason is starting to prevail. I don't know. This could just be a big joke on all of us. But it seems like things are finally moving forward. We're talking about outer space exploration again. We're not fighting major wars. It doesn't look like things are going to get out of hand. We seem to be solving the problems.
I think it's great that they can get to us.
Yeah, yeah, that's the most important thing, that they're getting together, even if it's only symbolic.
Right, even if it is only, you know. What do you think about these two first ladies who are... I heard on the news that they weren't getting along.
Well, I think that's, you know, it's an amusing sidelight, and I think both sides will probably view it in the same way. And it doesn't really matter. It doesn't. I mean, if they can fight, it's almost like they're being friends, because you can take sides. Like, you know, you can take Nancy Reagan's side, you can take Mrs. Gorbachev's side, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you're pro-Russian or pro-American. It's just two ladies fighting. And you can sort of see the similarities. You can see, oh, Mrs. Gorbachev reminds me of my Aunt Edna, you know. And that kind of that brings us together a little bit.
Okay, two questions. Does this show up on the phone bill?
It depends where you're calling from.
Patrick.
It won't show up on your long-distance bill. It'll probably cost you about 12 cents.
No problem. And do you know what the weather's supposed to be like tomorrow?
The weather? Well, that's a very good question. Is there a weather forecast around here? We usually have. Is this a weather forecast? Hold on. Yes, we do have the weather. For Sunday?
Yeah.
Mostly sunny and milder, high around 70.
Oh, I got to work.
Okay.
Well, I'd just like to say, if Tommy's listening, I want him to come to Dunkin' Donuts and visit me.
Okay.
Work.
Dunkin' Donuts.
Right.
You got it.
Same Floyd Parkway. Great advertisement.
Well, it's not an advertisement, a non-commercial station, and we don't recommend anyone goes there, but that's where you are, I guess.
I don't think
there's any Dunkin' Donuts in the Soviet Union yet. There's a Pizza Hut, there's a McDonald's, and
Hello. And
they're selling Pepsi, I know that.
Yeah, and they sell Coke, and when I went up to Canada,
yeah,
they had McDonald's, and they had all those things, but all the spelling and with the menus were in French and everything.
Yeah, you know, if they keep them different and more than just the language, if they make it distinct, it might not be a bad thing, but there really should be more of a two-way exchange here. That's the way I view it.
I really enjoyed talking to you.
Okay, thanks for calling.
You too. Bye.
Bye. Okay, that was, I guess, a good view of how Long Islanders feel about all this. The Iron Curtain is opening. That's what the headline in the New York Times said a couple of days ago. U.S.-Soviet tension is now receding, Reagan declares. And, of course, some of us would say that he made a lot of that tension by saying rather nasty things. The president has returned home as of Friday, and he says Gorbachev is really doing some positive things. Long-standing tensions between the East and the West are receding steadily as the Soviet Union makes major changes in its internal policies and structure. The president said, "My personal impression of Mr. Gorbachev is that he is a serious man seeking serious reform." Serious thing. "We look to this trend to continue. We must do all that we can to assist it." As Winston Churchill used an American setting, Fulton, Missouri, in 1946 to describe the descent of an Iron Curtain across Europe, Mr. Reagan used a speech in Britain 42 years later to declare that the barrier is lifting. "Quite possibly, we are beginning to take down the barriers of the post-war era. Quite possibly, we are entering a new era in history. A time of lasting change in the Soviet Union. We will have to see, but if so, it is because of the steadfastness of the Allies, the democracies for more than 40 years, and especially in this decade." Well, that's sort of falling back into the rhetoric a bit. Doesn't matter who is responsible so much as the fact that something positive seems to be happening. And maybe, just maybe, we can see in our lifetime something that I didn't think was possible, a dismantling of the barriers. Maybe the Berlin Wall will come down soon. Imagine what that will mean. Imagine that. Well, we're going to go back to Radio Moscow, listen to some of the news that they broadcast. And then another program as far as exchanging ideas back and forth. And if you've listened to Radio Moscow over the years, you'll notice a tremendous difference in the way they're presenting things as well. It's not as stiff, and at least today there were no barrages of rhetoric saying that, the fascist, imperialist United States did this today. That doesn't seem to be there. There's a genuine interest in communication and exchange of ideas and an openness that I've never really seen before. People are asking questions that never would have made it onto the radio, onto Soviet radio. So the questions we have to ask are, is this for real? And what does it mean? What is it leading to? Give us a call after the broadcast here. This is taped from Radio Moscow about an hour and a half ago. Or maybe a little less than that. Radio Moscow transmitting to the United States here on WUSB in Stony Brook.
Moscow, and here is the news. First, the headlines. In Moscow, General Secretary Mikhail Gorbachev has met President Najibullah of Afghanistan. The United States President Ronald Reagan has described the Moscow summit as historic. In Montreal, Canada, the International Movement of Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War is holding its Congress. Those were the headlines. Now the news in detail. General Secretary Gorbachev has received President Najibullah of Afghanistan. The Soviet leader briefed the Afghan president on the results of the talks he had had in Moscow with United States President Ronald Reagan. President Najibullah spoke highly of the summit, describing it as a major international event. The two sides voiced the intention to expand cooperation in various fields. The Afghan president had made a stopover in Moscow on his way to New York for the special United Nations General Assembly session on disarmament. The Afghan Foreign Ministry has handed a note to the United Nations Observer Mission in Kabul. The document calls attention to the new violations of the Geneva Accords by Pakistan. Saturday reports mention the crossing of the Pakistani-Afghan border by another caravan carrying weapons for the Afghan anti-government groups. The Bakhtar News Agency says the caravan was intercepted by Afghan soldiers in the district of Gushta in Nangarhar province. President Ronald Reagan has described his meeting in Moscow with General Secretary Gorbachev as historic. In the Saturday radio address to the nation from the White House, he said the re-exchange of ratification instruments of the INF Treaty had made the summit a success. The importance of that treaty cannot be overestimated. An entire class of nuclear arms is being eliminated. The United States president said that at the talks, considerable progress had been achieved on other issues concerning bilateral relations, the settlement of regional conflicts, and a future treaty to cut by half strategic offensive arms. President Reagan believes that such a treaty, despite all the differences, in some cases serious ones, is an achievable goal. In Montreal, a Congress of the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War is underway. About 2,000 delegates from 60 countries are taking part. The Congress has issued a statement saying that the meeting of Soviet and American leaders has improved the international situation, fostered trust, and shattered stereotypes. The chairman of the Soviet Committee, member of the Soviet Academy of Sciences, Kuzin, in his speech said that the International Movement of Physicians regarded a stop to nuclear testing as a necessary prerequisite of disarmament. The Indian Prime Minister, Mr. Rajiv Gandhi, has called for an international conference under United Nations auspices to search for a comprehensive settlement of the Palestinian problem. As he spoke at a reception in his honor in Damascus, Syria, Rajiv Gandhi pointed out that all the parties to the conflict, including the Palestine Liberation Organization, should be invited to that conference. He condemned Israel for repression against the Arabs and called for an end to the occupation of Arab territories. Israeli troops have been put on high alert on the occupied territories. This step is aimed at suppressing the incessant and mass-scale Arab protests. On Saturday, rallies and demonstrations were timed for the sixth anniversary of the 1982 Israeli incursion into Lebanon. Soldiers again clamped down on the demonstrators using firearms and tear gas grenades. Several Arabs were injured. A Politburo member said the party had led the country onto the road of renewal and social reforms. Yegor Ligachev described perestroika as the only means of coping with the economic stagnation and as a powerful instrument to accelerate the country's social and economic advancement. The next steps to be taken, according to Yegor Ligachev, would be a political reform, changes in the electoral system, and a legal reform. He said all allegations about differences in the Soviet leadership were aimed at driving a wedge between its members. Public associations, trust, civic dignity, alternative, and several other grassroots groups have held a rally in downtown Moscow to support the changes in the nation's social and political life. Its participants carried placards saying, "People self-defense against bureaucrats," and "Hold on, Gorbachev, we'll go to the barricades with you." Soviet national television has screened a report from the Baikonur Cosmodrome where final preparations are underway for a joint Soviet-Bulgarian flight to the orbital complex Mir. The takeoff is due next Tuesday. The main and supporting crews, each consisting of two Soviet and one Bulgarian spaceman, are practicing the crucial stages of the flight to Mir and back. Pre-flight medical checkups prove that all cosmonauts are in perfect shape. The Soviet spacemen Vladimir Titov and Musa Manarov, who've been manning the Mir station for over 5 months now, are getting ready to receive the visiting crew. Soviet cosmonaut Alexei Leonov believes that man will land on Mars early in the next century, and that will be an international mission. In his opinion, even now, it's technically possible to design a spacecraft for a flight to Mars. The Soviet carrier rocket Energia can take 27 tons of cargo there. A spokesman for the Soviet Committee on Labor has stated that the Soviet Union will keep full employment, though the economic reform will make redundant 3 million people by 1990 and by the year 2000, 16 million. One of the reserves is multi-shift work, which opens new vacancies. The now underdeveloped sphere of services will increasingly demand more hands. The Metropolitan or Archbishop of Volokolamsk and Yuryev, Peterim, has told a news conference in Moscow that the Russian Orthodox Church will celebrate some 1,000 years as a thanksgiving to God. Festivities are beginning on Sunday the 5th. The deputy chairman of the Jubilee Commission, Metropolitan of Kiev and Galitsa, Filaret, has said he's very happy that celebrations marking the 1,000th anniversary of the introduction of Christianity in Russia have coincided with renewal. The church is calling on everybody to take an active part in perestroika, he said. Metropolitan Filaret has described the development of relations between the church and the state as successful. Next Tuesday, the Russian Orthodox Church will regain part of the Kiev-Pechorsk Laura, the former monastery in the Ukrainian capital. The Metropolitan Filaret of Kiev and Galitsa, who informed the newsmen about this in Moscow on Saturday, said an icon lamp would be relit and monastic life resumed in the Laura. A museum on its grounds would continue belonging to the Ukrainian Ministry of Culture. The Metropolitan pointed to the positive development of relationships between the state and the church and recalled that two monasteries, the Tolga Monastery near Yaroslavl and the Optina Pustin near Kaluga, have been transferred to the church recently. New temples have been opening in the country. On the eve of the millennium of Christianity in Russia, the church had been circulating nearly 500,000 copies of the Bible printed in Russian and Ukrainian. An explosion occurred on Saturday on a freight train at the station of Arzamas in the Gorky region east of Moscow. The blast damaged the railroad station and nearby industrial and residential buildings. A number of people were killed. Medical assistance has been offered to those injured, and a government commission has been set up to look into the reasons for the accident and to organize reconstruction work. Steffi Graf of West Germany has won the French Open for the second time. In the final, Steffi beat 17-year-old Natalia Zvereva of the Soviet Union. And playing in a French Open final to Zvereva is a sensational success in itself. However, it's grown dim somewhat after today's play. And that's the end of the news from Moscow.
And now we present Tonight, a daily program coming to you in the North American service of Radio Moscow. This Saturday evening you'll hear Moscow Mailbag with Joe Adamov answering our listeners' questions, a radio bridge between Moscow and St. Louis. The topic, the Moscow Summit. Sidelights on Soviet life and an interview with CNN's correspondent Peter Arnett.
This is your program, Moscow Mailbag. Here is Joe Adamoff to answer your questions. The first question, Tony Tarantini of Central Islip, New York, asks, what do your working people think of America and of American people?
By and large, our average citizen is very friendly to the people of America. And I'm saying this not because of the recent summit, or because this is the time to say nice things to each other. We still think of Americans as allies ever since the last war. Our people see Americans as people just like themselves, peace-loving, proud, friendly. And our people feel that they could get along fine with Americans. As for America, the country, the administration, well, they don't often agree with your foreign policy. They think of America as a rich country, a land of skyscrapers, of automobiles, and, of course, of one- and two-story homes. They think of America as a land of technical know-how, of business efficiency. Well, of course, they also know about the shady sides of American life, like drug addiction, the homeless, the unemployed. Well, maybe these facets of your life have been played up a bit too much by our media. I think that's a fact. But one thing they do know is that they can and must get along with you.
Are your people as afraid of war and famine and disease as the rest of the world?
I think it is because our people experience the horrors of war, of occupation, the horrors of having lost 20 million lives. I think that's why they're such avid supporters of all peace initiatives. You know, Leningrad alone lost 900,000 lives because of hunger. 900,000. My wife was down to 61 pounds when she left the city. Well, we experienced all this. You luckily did not. In the early 30s, we had a famine. Then an epidemic of typhus during the Civil War that followed the revolution. So you see, is there any wonder that our people don't want any of it again? And I mean this seriously. Yes, God did shed his grace on me.
Dennis McBrookins of San Antonio, Texas inquires, is crime in the USSR on the rise like in the USA?
I'll give you some official statistics, not too many, so as not to bore you. Beginning with 1985, crime has been on the downgrade. Last year, the total number of crimes went down by 9.5%. Now, that includes grave crimes, which went down by 14%. But if you want to compare statistics, in our country, at present, there's an average of... I was surprised when I read this. There was an average of 9 to 10,000 premeditated murders annually. In the United States, you have 15 to 16,000. Well, our specialists say that the fact that the number of violent crimes has gone down can partly be explained by the fact that these crimes are often perpetrated in a state of intoxication, and our anti-alcoholic campaign has lowered this type of crime. No, of course, not everywhere. On the other hand, there's been a rise recently in the number of thefts, both of government and private property. And there's been a rise in juvenile crime and repeated crime. Now, what with glasnost, our openness, we've learned that we're not immune to organized crime, strange as it may seem, and rackets. Yes, rackets. Now, there have been cases in some areas of the country when the leading party officials, the law enforcement bodies, the government agencies have merged with the underworld to form, whether you like it or not, Soviet-style mafia. And the huge articles in our press have described the details.
...doors for Global News Services.
Before President Carter imposed an embargo on your ships in U.S. ports, Are they allowed to call in the USA?
You see, the last Soviet cruise ship visited the United States in the fall of 1979. There have been none since then. But do understand that this is not our fault and not our initiative. Let's hope they'll start coming to American ports again. Our cruise ships carry passengers to many parts of the globe. They sail around Europe, from Leningrad through the Baltic to the North Sea, the Mediterranean, and into the Black Sea. They sail around Africa to India. They sail to Australia, Singapore, and Japan, across the Atlantic to Cuba, and across the Atlantic through the Panama Canal to the islands of the Pacific.
Robert Puccini of West Islip, New York, asked the following question. How is your country dealing with such issues as euthanasia, abortion, and the death penalty?
Well, look, we've had a question from Tony Tarantini from Central Islip, and here's a question from Robert Puccini from West Islip. Is this supposed to be funny or what? All right, now the answer. Euthanasia. We're 100% against euthanasia, whatever the reason. Abortion. We allow abortion if it's performed in a clinic, but the doctors always try to talk the woman out of resorting to abortion. Statistics you may be interested to know show that the number of deaths and complications was greater when abortion was forbidden. One of the reasons for abortions, in my opinion, is that the pill, as you know, it is practically unknown here. And finally, the death penalty. You see, there's a wide discussion in the press, and many people want to see it abolished. My personal opinion is that some changes will take place. Maybe the number of crimes for which the penalty is capital punishment will be greatly cut. I think that will be the final outcome, but I don't know. Let's wait and see.
Tom Foti of West Allis, Wisconsin asks, what space exploration is planned in the near future?
The nearest launch is a joint Soviet-Bulgarian crew. That's at the beginning of June. Then in August, there'll be a joint Soviet-Afghan crew. We're negotiating with Austria on a joint flight. Then I've seen some French cosmonauts on television. They're preparing for a more lengthy flight with us than before. On July 7th and 12th, we're launching two probes towards Mars. According to the international project called Phobos. In preparing this program for these probes, scientists from more than 10 countries took part, and also from the European Space Agency. The expedition will clarify many obscure phenomena. Among other things, it'll try to lift the veil over the secret of the origin of our solar system. When the stations reach an altitude of a few dozen yards above the Martian satellite, they'll overfly the satellite at a speed slightly exceeding the speed of a pedestrian, very slowly. The stations will explore the Phobos ground at about 100 different points and obtain color images of its surface. Then the stations will send descent capsules to Phobos.
Carl Nelson of Winnipeg, Manitoba asks, do workers receive extra pay for working in remote areas?
Yes, they do. This is done, you understand, to attract workers to remote areas where they are most needed. But we've learned that wages alone are not enough to attract labor to these regions, and especially to get them to settle there. What is needed is good housing, child welfare centers, cultural and sports centers, decent stores. If they have these things, then they stay.
Dale Goker of Birmingham, Alabama writes, does the Soviet government truly believe our great nations cannot coexist?
You know, I'm afraid this is one of the biggest misconceptions about us. It was Lenin, the father of our government and of our party, who no sooner was our nation born, who spoke about peaceful coexistence between our country and the rest of the world. It is a policy of live and let live, and we adhere to it to this day because there is no alternative to peaceful coexistence. Now, ascribing to us non-existing theories of conquering the world is a lot of nonsense, you'll pardon my saying. And this has been done, unfortunately, by some high-ranking officials in the United States.
And we have another interesting question. Would you tell me something about the Baltic Republics, especially the people?
Well, I guess you'd need a whole program for that, but I'll try to be very brief. What is characteristic of the Baltic Republics, I think, is the highly developed industries, highly developed agriculture, science, and culture. Now, U.S. not people. Take Lithuania. Today, they have 10 times more college students than they did in pre-Soviet times. Or take their scientists. The Lithuanian Academy of Sciences today has 12 research centers and over 80 research institutes, and that's a tiny republic. Take the well-known composer and pianist Raimon Pauls. He's one of the most popular Soviet musicians, comes from Latvia. You asked about people. The people of these republics love song festivals. And this is very typical of the Baltic republics. They have choruses 20,000 strong. And they attract audiences even bigger who join in, incidentally. And most of the singers and musicians are amateurs. They usually do these performances out in the open, in an open-air theater. And another very characteristic feature of the people of the Baltics is that they enjoy a higher standard of living than do the people in other parts of the Soviet Union.
Robert Wells of Clearwater, Florida, writes, did your flag exist before the 1917 revolution?
Yes, it did. It existed long before that. In fact, it existed in other countries, too. The red flag has for centuries been a symbol of the liberation struggle. It first appeared in Russia in the 17th century during the peasant uprising. Then the red flag was hoisted in France during the Republican uprising in Paris in 1832 and during the Paris Commune of 1871. And from the 90s of the last century, it has been a symbol of the fight against the Tsar. The red flag has been officially named as the state flag of the Soviet Union in the 1936 Constitution.
How about this question? Does each republic have its own flag?
Yes, each republic does have its own flag. Besides its own flag, it has its own emblem, its own anthem. In the local language, they have their own television, drama theaters, film studios. And all business is conducted in the local language, and so are hearings in the courts.
Michael Muir of Glendale, California asks, how is restructuring your society going to affect workers with regards to employment or career changes?
Interesting question. Now that enterprises are becoming self-sufficient, that is self-sufficient financially, they're interested in doing the same thing with less workers and with less office personnel. So many workers are dismissed, but are immediately either retrained for other jobs, sometimes even with higher pay, or are offered a pick of other jobs in other places. Mind you, there's a lack of labor in many areas, and they certainly do not become redundant. I'll give you one classic example, if I may call it that. The Belarusian Railroad dismissed 12,000 workers. Well, they found jobs elsewhere, and each worker, in fact, was offered a choice of two or three other jobs. And mind you, all this initiative of working with less personnel came from below, that is, from the workers themselves.
Our next question comes from Terry Palmersheim of New Brighton, Minnesota, and he asks, the USSR exports autos to Canada. Do you plan to bring them to the USA in the near future?
No, not in the near future.
Terry Palmersheim wants us to start a comedy program.
Well, I don't know, Terry, about a comedy program. Maybe I will end some of these shows with a sort of a funny story or a joke. I'll tell you one. A mouse was hiding under the floor and could not come out because there was a cat in the room. The cat waited and waited and waited, but the mouse, sensing that the cat was still up there, did not emerge. Then the cat barked like a dog. The mouse, hearing a dog barking, realized that if there was a dog up there, there'd be no cat around within earshot. So the mouse climbed out of its hiding place, the cat caught it, and finished it off. Now, the moral of the story is this. It shows how important it is to know at least one foreign language.
This has been Joe Adamov answering your questions on Moscow Mailbag. Address your letters to Radio Moscow, Moscow, USSR. You couldn't do better than write us that letter. Your comments on this show are always welcome.
Time now for the news in brief. General Secretary Mikhail Gorbachev has received President Najibullah of Afghanistan. The Soviet leader briefed the Afghan president on the results of the talks he had had in Moscow with President Reagan. President Najibullah spoke highly of the summit, describing it as a major international event. The Afghan president had made a stopover in Moscow on his way to New York for the special United Nations General Assembly session on disarmament. President Reagan has described his meeting in Moscow with General Secretary Gorbachev as historic. In the Saturday radio address to the nation from the White House, he said the very exchange of ratification instruments of the INF Treaty had made the summit a success. The importance of that treaty cannot be overestimated. President Reagan believes that a treaty on a 50% cut in strategic arms, despite all the differences, is an achievable goal. In Montreal, the Congress of the International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War is underway. About 2,000 delegates from 60 countries are taking part. The Congress has issued a statement saying that the meeting of Soviet and American leaders has improved the international situation, fostered trust, and shattered stereotypes. That ends the news in brief from the North American service of Radio Moscow.
We now bring you a short version of a radio hookup, one in a series of similar programs held during President Reagan's visit to this country. This program was broadcast live on June the 2nd and linked KMOX radio station in Chicago, Illinois, with an English-speaking Soviet panel of two in Moscow. The topic of the show was the Moscow summit. Answering questions from KMOX host Jim White and his audience were Pavel Kuznetsov, the head of the North American service of Radio Moscow, and Nikolai Kornakov, a broadcaster in the same section.
Some years back at this point, our president, Ronald Reagan, referred to your nation as the evil empire. What was the reaction there when that occurred, and what is the reaction to that today?
Well, the first reaction was very negative, surprise, and of course, negative reaction. Why would he call at this time? I could understand maybe if he did that in 1950, 51, or 49. But now, several years ago, calling this the evil empire, of course, he called it surprise and very negative reaction.
As a matter of fact, Jim, he was asked in Moscow about whether he any longer believes that the Soviet Union is an evil empire. And he said, he replied, no, I don't believe it anymore. So he kind of learned the situation. He is changing his mind. He is changing his attitude a little bit. But as far as I'm concerned, I was not so much upset about this evil empire as by his slip of the tongue during that notorious voice test in a studio somewhere, I think it was in California, when he said that a nuclear attack on the Soviet Union begins in 5 minutes. Well, I was upset much more by that slip of the tongue. Also, the president disavowed it or played it down a little bit. But to me, it was much worse than that evil empire thing.
I think that, judging by what I've seen here and what I've heard him say, I think he's very sorry he ever said that evil empire thing, because from all correspondents, not only Soviet foreign correspondents, but more than Soviet correspondents, every third or fourth question is, how about that evil empire? Do you still think it? Why did you? And so on and so forth. And, of course, this business of bombing Russia, it may be a harmless little quip, you know, just off the bat, but still it shows something of what goes on back deep in the person's mind.
You gentlemen are in the media. You are the network broadcasters. You are the top of the heap of journalists in your nation. How do you look upon our media when you run across people like Sam Donaldson and Dan Rather and our media people who are over there and the chaos of the reporters? What is your opinion of the news media of the United States?
I think, Jim, they've done a terrific job covering the summit. Americans were all over the place, and I think we are not not ages behind, but years behind you people in terms of being as professional as they are. And I watched CNN operating 24 hours a day with updates, with immediate interviews with top-flight Soviet experts and dignitaries, and the work carried and were handled in a very professional way. Of course, I have some gripes, my personal gripes, and they have to do with such minor things as giving a twist here, giving a spin there, and the overall impression may be not very very pleasant. Well, I'd like to refer you to such a minor thing in your view, perhaps, as a comment by one of the CNN commentators when the Order Guard was passing by President Reagan and President Gromyko on the day of for the president's arrival. And this man, this American, referred to our troops goose-stepping like as if there were Nazi troops passing by. Although we began goose-stepping as when there was no Nazi Germany. I think it was back in the 18th century. So, you know, this kind of a twist gives us sort of puts the whole picture, the whole situation, a kind of biased picture. Now, there were many slips of the tongue, if I may call them slips of the tongue like that. But overall, I'm impressed. I've been impressed by the way they covered the summit. Very professional.
Well, the only thing I'd like to add is that your journalism and our journalism are very different. In the first place, American correspondents, they are highly efficient, very fast, and very stubborn and insistent. They want to get their picture, they want to get their show. Well, for instance, like you have that group that follows President Reagan around no matter where he goes or what he does. We have no such thing here. And your insistence on having something very personal in the news. What color was the dress? How was he dressed? What did he say? What did he eat? Things like that. We haven't gotten to that stage yet. And honestly speaking, I hope we never will get to that stage as deeply and insistently as you have.
Well, quite honestly, one of the major stories on the networks and in the papers in this country today has been the little tiff between the two first ladies. And frankly, it is not going to be remembered a year from now when the ink has dried on the treaty signed. But a great deal of attention was paid to that. Was any of it, was attention paid to it there?
Well, there were a few questions about that when they just came, and Nancy and Raisa, they went strolling through inside the Kremlin grounds. And somebody asked them about that, and Gorbachev's wife answered that that's not serious. Now, whether there was anything or not, we do not know. We weren't there. Possibly there are two personalities, two first ladies. Maybe there was something between them. Who knows? But I don't think it was anything serious or worth bothering about.
All right, gentlemen, we are going to take some phone calls, if that is all right with you.
All right, let's go.
And let's go. I'm sure, let's take one and make sure you're going to be able to hear. Hello?
Hi. Yes, I just wanted to know, what would the average Russian family like to know about the average American family? I think it'd be great if, like, a Russian family could spend the summer traveling around the United States with an American family in the following year the other way.
All right, Donna, could you hear that?
Well, it's hard to say what the average Soviet family would like to know. I think they'd like to know anything about how people live, their houses, apartments, cars, the stores, what they do, where they work, the work hours. Especially, I'm pretty sure many people would ask about medical facilities, schools, the cost of college, and so on. Well, ordinary questions, you know, everyday life.
Excuse me, another question came in from a listener asking about juvenile crime and juvenile violence in a school. Is it a problem there?
Well, I wouldn't say violence so much, but problems of juveniles, yes, we do have that. Some narcotics, some alcohol, and in general, some of the kids, you see that they don't know what to do with their energy. And
what happens to a young person there who is caught, say, with a narcotic?
He's in trouble. In the first place, they'll try to find out where he got it from. And then try to pin it down and cut it out. But, you know, that's not a very easy thing to do. I mean, you may find one, you may not find some others.
And there are special discipline centers, I would say, for teenagers who are not yet 18. They are not sentenced as adults, for example. They don't go through the same legal procedures as adults. If a minor is caught with narcotics, say, at the age of 14 or 15, I think he will be placed on a special watch list at a local police station, and he will be looked after. And, of course, the police will get in touch with the school where he goes to and with his family. But I don't think that a first offense is fraught with a sentence term. This does not happen here. Although juvenile delinquency and juvenile crime is something that's been worrying us for a long time. That's true. Another call. Good evening, you're on the air.
Thank you for this opportunity to speak to the Russian gentleman. Regarding their immigration policy, I think fear of a brain drain has a lot to do with the Russian policy. And will the Russian gentleman comment, please?
All right.
I would go along with Americans in one thing as far as immigration is concerned. This is my personal view. In America, you people say, America, love it or leave it. And I'm with you 100% on that. But I understand there are some security concerns with our immigration authorities, so we're going through these on a case-by-case basis. And the latest information that I have is that the number of refusals for immigration, the percentage, is down to 2.5%. And if a person is denied an immigration permission for the first time, he may apply in 6 months. So this is how it is done technically. But, as far as I'm concerned, I'd like to repeat it once again. Those who want to go out, okay, I don't mind.
I agree 100%, but you've got to remember one thing, that this business of immigration, of people leaving, even of people just traveling to another country just to see what it's like as a tourist, this is all more or less new, and we're starting it. It's snowballing. It's going forward very quickly, but don't forget, we didn't have it in past years. And this is a huge country. You can't just take something and change it overnight and have, you know, yesterday it was out, today it's in.
Jim, I have time to say something else on that. As far as travel is concerned, I think many of the problems stem from the fact that this is this hard currency reserves are involved. We cannot travel to the United States using rubles. We have to use dollars, and there are some limits on our hard currency possibilities in this
country. Introduce rubles in the United States, you'll have a lot more Soviet citizens.
That's interesting. And we don't, in this country, really think of the Soviet Union as a place to go on vacation. Personally, I would love to tour the Soviet Union sometime, but I have been through Europe, through South America, through Canada, through the Orient. I was in China the past October. But for some reason or another, the Soviet Union does not pop up, at least in my mind, as a place to go to have a good time. Are you going to work to change that?
To change
that image?
We certainly are. We invite you. And I know that not long ago there was a gentleman here, I think his name was Berkeley or Barclay. He's one of the top executives of a thing called International Management Group. And he builds golf courses, tennis courts, swimming pools. And he came here. He was interested in doing the same thing in the Soviet Union for travelers who want to come here and play golf.
Incidentally, Jim, the Soviet Union is terrorism-proof, and this is one attraction that draws so many foreigners to the Soviet Union. There was a big story breaking about 2 years ago when terrorism was on the rise in Italy, in the Mediterranean, and your American publications such as Newsweek and Time advertise travel to the Soviet Union as being absolutely safe in this sense. So please do come. I'll be your host.
Any good restaurants? I do like to eat.
I judge countries by their food.
Okay, not as good as in America yet. That's true.
All right, back to the calls.
Hello, you're on the air. Good evening.
Good evening, Jim, and good evening to, or good morning to the gentleman in Moscow. My question is, I would like to know the relationship between Pervert Gorbachev and the Politburo. They seem like a very hardline communist, and he's promoting glasnost and openness. And what I want to know is the Politburo behind him in this?
Thank you. Jim, are there debates within the American administration? I think there's plenty of debates, and people are coming up with various problems and solutions and pieces of advice, and they do not agree on everything within the administration. Much the same is happening within our Politburo. And it's a pretty healthy sign, I think. There's got to be a broad panoramic view within the administration, within the Politburo. People should not agree on everything. As far as I understand, as Mikhail Gorbachev himself explains very much, they sit for 6 to 10 hours discussing things before they come up with a vote on something. And there should be representatives from all streams of thought within the Politburo. Otherwise, it won't be a working body. It won't be a good and representative body. So I think it is perfectly healthy. And according to Mikhail Gorbachev, the Politburo is a political body of the party, the leading political voice of the party. They are, all of them are, behind Perestroika.
Let's put it this way. The Politburo generally is a whole body moving in the same direction, but they have their disagreements, their arguments, their debates.
Would it be, I'm trying to think of an analogy, would the Politburo be comparable to anything we have in our government?
No, I don't think so, no.
It would not be similar to the cabinet then?
Well, the cabinet is narrower. The cabinet includes the ministers, so-called, the secretaries of the various departments. We have the Council of Ministers, which includes all the ministers of our country. And they're much wider, much broader than the cabinet. But as the Politburo, no, I don't think you have anything like it.
Politburo, generally, is a top party organ or body, a group of people who supervise and oversee party policy between the party congresses. And there is also the Central Committee of the Communist Party, which is another top party organ.
That's much broader.
Yeah, much broader. It includes about 300 members. That's and the power of decision, major decision, belongs with the
The Politburo is what, 13?
Yeah,
13.
Another quick question. This came to mind, and I've heard some conflicting reports on this as to whether or not Mr. Gorbachev does, in fact, speak or understand English.
Well, your guess is as good as mine. I was watching TV, and a few times I saw him turn to the president or to Nancy Reagan. She would say something to him, and he answered without an interpreter. So I think that possibly he knows something.
I just talked to a lady from the Center for Soviet American Dialogue, a public organization. She attended a meeting with Raisa Gorbachev, and the Americans and the other foreigners on that group were greeted by Raisa Gorbachev in English. That's what, as far as I can.
I think the first we heard.
Just in case it could.
Yes.
So just in case it comes up on your end where the president speaks Russian, he does not.
Yes, we realize that in the way he mentions these Russian proverbs.
Anyway, there is Alexander Yakovlev, who is also a member of Politburo, who speaks English, and he was translating for Mikhail Gorbachev on a couple of occasions within the
yesterday.
He was taking questions from a correspondent from Brazil, and he was talking to Dan Rather and Mikhail Gorbachev. And the interpreter was Alexander Yakovlev, one of his close aides.
It seemed to me, if I was ever in that position, I would want at least two interpreters, just to make sure. Hello, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Jim, how are you doing this evening?
Doing great.
Yeah, I was going to see if you could
give me your opinion about how you feel Premier Gorbachev compares to other Russian premiers in the past, as far as the public opinion and the rest of the administration feel?
I don't think
Are you talking about how
in the Soviet Union?
And we'll have to cut it off at that point. We've been listening to Radio Moscow, a program that was taped earlier tonight, only less than a couple hours ago, a program about relations between the two countries. And we'd like to hear from you now at area code 516-632-6901. Tell us your impressions of what you've heard and where it's all going. Is this Glasnost thing for real? Or are those Soviets up to something? Give us a call, 632-6901, and let us know how you feel about all of that. It's 11:42. The program is Brain Damage. Eric Corley with you until midnight, at which time we'll have Bob Longman coming in, filling in for the brothers. Or maybe he's been initiated and he now is a brother. I don't know. We'll have to find out about that. 632-6901. We've been listening to a program. I forget what the name of the program was. It was kind of like a half-hour program. Nightlife, not Nightline or something. I don't know. Moscow Tonight, something like that. It had night in it somewhere. And they were just talking about issues. Now, I've listened to this radio station, I guess you'd call it, radio network, whatever Radio Moscow is considered, over the years. And for the most part, it's been rather stiff. It's been predictable and simply filled with propaganda. Tonight, what I heard on Radio Moscow was, well, for one thing, it was also broadcast on American TV. Those call-ins we heard, two of which came from Long Island. They pronounced Islip wrong, but one was from Central Islip and one was from East Islip. Or was it West Islip? I don't know. But maybe even those people are listening tonight. Imagine what a surprise it is to turn on USB, hear a broadcast of Radio Moscow in which you're mentioned. That could be almost fatally shocking to some people. So we had a broadcast that has also been on American TV, and it was interesting because you heard it from the perspective of the Soviets as they were sending it to us. You heard an American TV host, but it wasn't coming to you from the American TV host. It was coming to you from the folks in Moscow. Of course, it was coming to you through us from the folks in Moscow. It gets kind of crazy after a while, but I think you see the point. So, in all the time I've listened to Radio Moscow and the other networks of the Eastern Bloc, it's never been quite so open and honest and direct. And I'd like to know how the folks who heard this, if people, in fact, listened to the whole thing, was it boring? Was it exciting? What was it? Let me know. I'd like to know how you viewed the whole picture. Does it really make sense? 632-6901. Somebody in the radio station is answering the phone. They should not be doing that. 632-6901. My apologies to the caller who apparently got hung up on. Give us a call, please. 632-6901, area code 516. Good evening. You're on Brain Damage.
Nuke him!
Uh-huh. That's a sentiment that fortunately has not been around too much in the later Reagan years. Seemed to be around quite a bit in the early Reagan years, but now it seems to be sort of floating up into the sky or whatever happens to that. I'd like to appeal to some of the sane people who are still listening to give us a call with an intelligent opinion. I mean, that's not asking too much. I know we're on Long Island. I know we're in the 1980s here, and it's a Saturday night and all that kind of thing. But, you know, our survival depends on this. It's not like we're talking about, you know, about cupcakes or something. This is nuclear war and, you know, disaster and hatred and racism and all that kind of thing. It all ties together. I mean, this is relevant. You can't get more relevant than this. Give us 3 points for relevancy on a Saturday night here. 632-6901, area code 516. And who knows? Maybe we'll tape your call and send it over to Radio Moscow, and you can hear your question or comment broadcast throughout the entire world, and the entire world does hear this. Not this radio program, although it could if we sent the tape over to them. I'm sure they're open enough now that they would jump at the opportunity. I've never quite seen such an interest in the way we do things. And I'd like to see the same kind of interest on our part towards the way they do things. We should be able to turn on a TV channel and see a foreign newscast, unedited, the way they do it. We might get some ideas. We might get some news. We definitely would get some news that we don't get on our own TV stations and radio networks. What kind of ideas would you like to see? Give us a call, 632-6901. And some comments from Reagan when he got back to Washington. To those of us familiar with the post-war era, said the 77-year-old president, all of this is cause for shaking the head in wonder. He's not kidding, you know. President Reagan is shaking his head in wonder. Now, maybe that's what's happening to all the folks out there. They're still shaking their heads, and they're in some kind of trance or something. But this is a historic period of time. Decades from now, centuries from now, they will probably look back on the Gorbachev era. And if we're still around, if the Soviet Union is still around, if the United States is still around, he will be a catalyst of some sort, whether successful or a failure. He will be a revolutionary figure. And it's kind of interesting to be around in the same time. I have an article here from the Beijing Review, which is a Chinese weekly of news and views, which, ironically enough, is a radio program on Radio Moscow, but that's totally unrelated. In fact, we used to have a radio program called News and Views. I guess there's probably about 50 of them. Changes in international relations. Faced with many new challenges and problems, all countries, even the United States and the Soviet Union, have found it necessary to focus on their domestic economic development. This worldwide economic concern will be conducive to stabilizing the international situation for a reasonably long period. Now, that's a pretty fair example of why it's hard to get through articles like that, because they do talk a lot about the... I guess they talk in the passive speech, not active speech. So we'll try to spice it up a little bit. Relations between the United States and the Soviet Union were tense during the first half of this decade. A turn for the better appeared in the second half of 1985, while 1987 witnessed increasing détente with the signing of the treaty concerning the elimination of intermediate-range nuclear forces, known as the INF Treaty. Compared with the détente that emerged in East-West relations in the second half of the 1950s and the first half in the 1970s, the latest period of relaxation is likely to last longer due to the following new features. U.S. and Soviet economic troubles. There have been, I don't want to read all this boring stuff here, but of course we had a stock market crash. It's enormous long-standing financial and trade deficits. The Reagan administration had to increase taxes and reduce government spending. Americans are now speculating on whether another economic recession will come earlier than expected. And in an election year, the political importance of these economic troubles increases. Whereas in the Soviet Union, a plan of action to effectuate a thorough reform of the economic structure was drafted at a session of the Central Committee of the CPSU, Communist Party of the Soviet Union, that was held last June. In fact, they have another one coming up this June. That's the one where Gorbachev gives something like a 10-hour speech. Can you imagine Reagan giving a 10-hour speech? Maybe it's not 10 hours, maybe it's something like 5, but even so, I mean... Boy, I can't imagine Reagan doing anything for 5 hours straight. Well, actually, that's not entirely false. Anyway, however, since the deep-going reforms... Deep-going, that's a word I've never seen before. This is a Chinese magazine, so maybe they phrase things differently. But however, since the deep-going reforms of the past year have involved redistribution of interest among people of various strata, they have naturally caused social turmoil. The situation has become even more difficult as perestroika, which is the word for restructuring, the economic restructuring going on right now in the Soviet Union, could not possibly improve production and consumption within a year, but on the contrary, would temporarily adversely affect the growth of the economy. The Soviet leaders admit that the next 2 to 3 years will be the most difficult and crucial period for the reform. We don't have much time, so if anyone wants to call up with a comment on the Radio Moscow program or on Glasnost or the summit, now is the time to do it. You have about 2 minutes. 632-6901, area code 516-632-6901. You're going to feel like a real fool if no one calls, so that's what you want. Don't pick up the phone, because no one likes that better than me. Anyway, the other factor which will make this détente last longer, decline in the strength of the superpowers and the trend to multipolarity. Yes, in 1971, when Richard Nixon was president of the United States, he acknowledged that the power of the United States had begun to diminish and put forward the idea that the world would have five poles. He was a bit of a nut, that guy. In recent years, leaders of the Soviet Union have also admitted that Soviet influence on the world has dropped, and they have begun referring to the multipolarization of the world, of the United States and Soviet Union. I'm sorry, of course, I missed a line there. Of course, it must be admitted that the United States and Soviet Union still have great influence in the world, and this situation will not be changed for a long time. Nevertheless, the world is certainly moving into an era of multipolar powers. This tendency can be seen clearly in the world economy. In politics, the time when the United States and the Soviet Union had the final say on world affairs has passed. The idea of acting independently and on the basis of one's own initiative has been developed in all countries because of the reduction in strength of the United States and the Soviet Union, the rise of other forces in the world, and the improbability of another world war. The changes and adjustments in 1987 in U.S. and Soviet relationships with their allies have demonstrated this tendency. The U.S. allied countries in Western Europe welcomed but also showed concern over the INF Treaty. They feel increasingly suspicious about the will and the capabilities of the U.S. to defend them. They even believe that the U.S. will not use the nuclear weapons deployed on its territory in a conventional war launched by Warsaw Pact countries. They're also concerned that Washington will reduce the number of U.S. troops stationed in Europe someday. Some people have pointed out that the reaching of the INF agreement indicates that the U.S. nuclear forces will completely withdraw from Europe, and this means that the U.S. nuclear umbrella in Europe will cease to be effective. Because of this, the West European countries are determined to cooperate to promote their own self-defense strategies. This movement will continue, although it will be a long and arduous process. This cooperation between the West European countries will heighten their ability to act independently and force the U.S. to make new changes and adjustments in its relations with them. It will also give rise to new complicating factors in the coming disarmament talks. The Soviet Union has also made some adjustments in its relations with the East European countries. These have mainly concentrated on the question of socialist reconstruction. The Soviet Union has negated its own rigid model of socialist construction and hopes that the East European countries will also reject such a model. The Soviet Union no longer forces the East European countries to act according to its directions and recognizes that there is a diversity of methods of building socialism. The Soviet Union also admits that there were some debatable points in its political relations with the East European countries. In his speech celebrating the 70th anniversary of the October Revolution, Gorbachev pointed out that the principles of peaceful coexistence are also vital to the relations among socialist countries. This was the first time he raised the point. He also stressed that for a communist party, responsibility to its cause is tantamount to concerning itself with the common cause of all socialist countries. But for a long period previously, the Soviet Union emphasized the importance of the common interests of all socialist countries. The separate interests of all countries were not much discussed. And that apparently has been changing. Also, emphasis on competition in technological and economic fields is another reason why this is different, this period of détente that we are entering. That is the view, according to to the Beijing Review, a Chinese weekly of news and views, published every Monday by Beijing Review, 24 by Wanzhuang Road in Beijing, 10037. They have an extra number in their zip codes there. People's Republic of China. So that was a little bit different from the New York Times, I guess. Well, that's going to do it for us tonight. The program is Brain Damage, and we're here every week talking about some such thing or another. And we hope you enjoyed our little visit abroad and our look at other broadcasters and our discussion of what I certainly think are relevant events and fascinating things. In any event, we'll be back next week talking about something probably completely different and maybe even a little silly. Who knows? Stay tuned for the brothers. Actually, Bob Lawman filling in for the brothers starting at midnight. Power Surge coming up at about 3 or so, 2:30, 3, whatever time that is. And I'll be back again next Saturday night at 10 for Brain Damage. Till then, do whatever you've been doing. 3 minutes to 12 o'clock on a Saturday night.
The lunatic is on the grass. Remembering games, daisy chains and laughs. Got to keep the loonies on the path. The lunatic is in the hall. The lunatics are in my hall. The paper holds their bonnet faces to the floor. And every day the paper boy brings more. It's not me.